this punishment binge, it's just going to exacerbate those challenges. And this is why you've seen in the last few weeks a lot of the provinces and territories, some have supported the legislation, others like Quebec have not, but they've all stuck their hand out and said, if you're going to do this, give us some money, because we don't have the money to fund this kind of stuff. We don't have money to fund this incarceration binge. Well, the federal government seems to have made it clear that they're not going to provide additional transfers specifically for Bill C-10, which basically means that the money's got to come from somewhere. And right now it just seems like we're going to be borrowing for the time being until someone says we've had enough of this stuff and then start repealing some of these pieces of legislation. You know, it's going to mean that me and you are going to be paying this thing basically until we retire, if retirement is actually on the table for our generation, which I actually don't think it isn't.
That's a terrifying thought indeed. You mentioned Quebec, and I'd like to get your comment on recently Premier Jean Charest told the National Assembly that Ottawa may have the power to amend the criminal code as proposed in Bill C-10, but Canada's constitution gives the provinces power over the administration of justice and over whether the bill will be applied. Can you respond about that?
Well, basically what it's pointing to is this division in the constitution that the federal government's responsible for making the laws and the provincial territorial governments are responsible, for instance, for policing the courts and you know, remand and prison sentences under 2 years in length. They're going to be footing a lot of Bill C-10. I wrote about that. I really only see a few ways forward. Some have argued that the provinces and territories may actually have to go to court for the implementation of the bill or to seek financial compensation. I'm not actually sure whether or not they can do that. I don't think they'd want to do that in such an adversarial fashion. What should be done would be, you know, to have the cooling off period and to have the government withdraw C-10 and then to work together with the provincial territorial partners towards something that makes sense, that's based in evidence, that's actually going to enhance safety in our communities. I think what else could happen is potentially provinces and territories arguing for a division of how prison administration is done. So, for instance, saying, well, currently the rule is the two-year split where the feds are responsible for 2 years plus a day, provinces 2 years minus a day in remand. Maybe you could move that to 6 months, a year, that type of thing. Or maybe perhaps they'll just the federal government will change their tact for future pieces of legislation, or nothing will change. I think it's really up to Canadians to stand up and encourage the provinces and territories, and also encourage other federal members of parliament to basically stand up to this agenda. It's not going to enhance safety in our communities. It's going to cost future generations of Canadians tons of money.
It's interesting that you mentioned, you know, the people playing their part, doing their part to speak out against this bill. It seems as though a lot of opposition, this bill has been tabled with a lot of opposition. It was tabled in September. Debate on the bill was shut down by a closure of motion by the government, and it has now been referred to the Standing Committee of Justice and Human Rights, as far as I know. There's a march taking place November 23rd in Ottawa, which will have taken place by the time that this interview airs. What else, like, what happens next? Like, what else can people do? How can they voice their concerns? They can write letters to their MPs. Yeah, but what happens next with all of this opposition? The people in the House, like the House of Commons, the opposition parties in the House are opposing it. People are speaking out against it, and yet it's still going forward.
I think we need to change the conversation in this country. I'm assuming that most folks that listen to CKUT and who participate on the airwaves here are fairly critical of these policies. But I would say that a lot of radio stations, a lot of television stations, a lot of newspapers, for instance, have a bit of a doublespeak going on. Some are critique, for instance, the government's penal policies in one segment or one news story, and then on the next page or in the next segment, they're talking about the most sensational, unrepresentative cases, and, you know, that shock our conscience. You know, I think we need to try and change that conversation to speak about the real challenges that the criminalized and the victimized are facing, and to try and find a different inclusive way to addressing the complex harms and conflicts in our communities that we call crime, right? So I think, you know, if there's other radio stations in your town, right-leaning, left-leaning, center-leaning, you know, start participating and calling in on those shows. Start changing the conversation. Start holding our media accountable, and start holding our politicians, our representatives accountable. And if enough people speak out and enough people change that conversation from what it's been, this polarized so-called tough on crime versus soft on crime stuff, whereby people who are arguing for ineffective policy somehow get to bury the torch of the tough on crime side, and the people who are advocating for evidence-based policy are being labeled as soft on crime. It's completely ridiculous. We need to have serious conversations, and we need to hold those who you know, control those discussions accountable, and need to change the way that they speak about these issues and inform them as well. So, you know, there's various means of social media out there. You know, let's plug away and let's change the way people talk about this, and hopefully we'll see a change then. You know, there's really not too many other options. So, you know, I'd encourage everyone to do their part.
Thanks so much, Justin. I guess we'll leave it there for today.
We want to give a big thank you to all of our food sponsors for this year's All Over the Map funding drive. So thanks so much to Ovive, St. Viateur Bagels, Casa del Popolo, Lola Rosa, McGill Pizza, M Cafe, The Green Panther, Provigo, Le Frigo Vert, Burritoville, Dee's Beauty Salon, Chez Toto, Curry & Naan Deli Bombay, Bistro Araucaria, El Mundo Cafe, and Hong An Sandwich Vietnamien. CKUT's funding drive was made possible by all of these great businesses, so check them out.
And welcome back to CKUT 90.3 FM. You're listening to Tuesday Morning After. Coming up in this hour is Lillian Bochter, as our usual contributor with Voices of Egypt. But first up, an interview about sustainable radio.
Hello and welcome to Sustainable Binghamton Radio. I am your host, Hadassah Head, and today we are speaking with Michael Voss.
Yes.
He is a member of the alternative media, would you say?
Probably. That's probably the best description.
As well as a political blogger. We're really happy to have him on the show. Michael and I met last spring at a Binghamton Rising event that he was covering for the media at the Binghamton Public Library. I think it was one of our big launches on that. So that's how we met, and we got in contact on